It is the last day of the month. The Day Current State reviews the top news stories from the previous 30 days and what they mean moving forward. And here to help us do that today, Walt Sorg, columnist for City Pulse. Kyle Malin is back from MERS, the Michigan Information and Research Service, and Rick Pluta represents the Michigan Public Radio Network. Good morning to all of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Let's start out
representing.
Representing. Yeah. Let's start out by discussing a guy who appears he will throw his hat in the ring for the U.S. Senate from Michigan. This is Democratic Congressman Gary Peters. He is set to make an announcement tomorrow. Many expect it will be about his candidacy. Here is Congressman Gary Peters about a month ago here on Current State.
Certainly with Carl's retirement, I've been approached by many, many people, lots and lots of phone calls to consider this, and I've told folks I will definitely give it serious consideration because it's very important. The U.S. Senate seat is very important for Michigan. But it is one in which, first and foremost, it is about family, and that's something that we'll have to spend a little time talking about.
Kyle Malin, assess Gary Peters as a candidate and his chances of becoming our next senator.
Well, I would say his chances are very strong, and his chances of becoming the next U.S. Senator of Michigan are over 50-50, I would say. The Democratic field has pretty much cleared the way over these last several weeks for Gary Peters for this nomination. The only other Democrat who is even considering this, Debbie Dingell, the Democratic National Committee woman, said a couple weeks ago that she was not going to run, and that pretty much threw all the support behind Gary Peters. Earlier this week or earlier this month, we had every single member of the Democratic caucus on the Senate side and all but a handful on the House side support Gary Peters, just to kind of punctuate and emphasize his coronation, I guess, as the Democratic nominee. And
well, to announce in advance that, you know, that the dance has begun, you know, sort of put the needle down on the record player, saying, you know, this is the Senate race and he's the candidate.
What will people make of Peters who don't know about him, though? Walt Sorg, any thoughts on that?
I think he's going to try to portray that Levin image of being more studious, of not being flashy. Because he's not flashy; he's moderately boring. He's got to play to that. I think he's going to have the advantage. My guess is Mike Rogers will not run for the Republicans. I don't think he's not a gambler when it comes to his political future, and he very likely is going to end up with an opponent who's from the right side of the Republican Party. And I think Peters has got to come across as that solid centrist, progressive thinking Democrat. I think he'll be in good shape.
But we can come back to the Republican field in a few minutes, because that's really kind of the fascinating story here, because, you know, that's where all the potential for conflict is. I would disagree that Gary Peters is a boring speaker. I was at the Democratic convention, and he delivered a more than passable stem winder when he was there. But I think you're right that what he's going to want to do is, you know, it's hard to explain to outsiders what an iconic politician Carl Levin is in Michigan. And I think one of the questions in the campaign that Democrats are considering is, how can they create a mantle to be passed? That you know, this is really about continuing.
It really worked from Phil Hart to Carl Levin. It passed on, and that is the challenge, to make it go from Levin to Peters.
The senior senator mystique.
And at the same time, you know, one of the many challenges that Republicans are going to, you know, face in this is basically going and saying Gary Peters is no Carl Levin.
And that he's liberal, too. I mean, you got to keep that in mind. I mean, they're already trying
to lay
the
grain. When he was in the state Senate, he was the most liberal member of the, you know, of the state Senate, and that history is going to be resurrected.
I had to ask about the awareness of Peters outstate, simply because so much has been made in terms of how few Democrats know about Mark Schauer and Bart Stupak. That's been an issue on the gubernatorial side of the ledger, but nobody seems to be concerned about awareness of Gary Peters.
Well, Gary Peters did run, though, in 2002 statewide in a very competitive race.
Attorney General. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it was still Attorney General, but, you know, he had that statewide presence. And I think, as Walt was just about ready to say, Oakland County is a significant part of the state. And now that he's had to campaign in Detroit like he did last year to keep his seat in the Senate, folks know who Gary Peters Peters is, and I think that he doesn't have a hurdle.
Through, that district runs through a hefty swath of the most populated part of Michigan. That's one of the appeals of Gary Peters as a candidate. Another is, on paper, here's a guy who's served in the military. He's an officer in the Naval Reserve. He's been to the Middle East. That his pre-political background is in finance, and so he can argue that he's got some knowledge of matters financial, that he is a practical person. There is that history of Peters in some respects kind of underperforming when he was on the Granholm ticket to run for attorney general after not making it in the primary to be the gubernatorial candidate. And that's sort of the question mark, which is Gary Peters someone who plays well in Southeast Michigan and then sort of collapses on a statewide stage, or is he someone who's now, really ready for prime time?
I would say it was the party that collapsed on him when he ran for attorney general. They just basically abandoned him.
Any other thoughts on the Republican side here? Waltz weighed in, doesn't think Mike Rogers is going to run.
I would love to see Mike Rogers run, because it would give us a great U.S. Senate race to cover, I would say. I mean, it would give us something absolutely competitive, but I think Walt's got a great point there in that he has not been a real risk taker when it comes to his political future. When he has run in competitive races, though, I mean, 2000 with Diane Byron.
That was his last
competitive race. That was his first congressional race and his last competitive race, and then...
He won, though.
Then Republican... Yes,
100 votes.
Yeah, win's a win,
And then the Republican legislature made sure that he always had super safe districts to run in.
Mitt Romney carried his current district by about 4 points.
It's been a long time since he's faced that kind of a race. He's got a very powerful, responsible position that he will be able to keep, that it's not chair of the House Intelligence Committee, is not subject to the term limits on congressional committee chairs, and he is a well-known and influential commodity in Washington. Does he want to risk that? A lot of people are talking about Justin Amash, a libertarian Tea Partier from West Michigan. But in Terry Lynn Land, a lot of people are also talking about. We've got some of the same issues with Gary Peters that we referred to before that. The question is, can Republicans avoid a big, divisive, expensive primary? And if Mike Rogers does not get into the race, a lot of Republicans think not.
Before we get too wrapped up in 2014, let's continue looking back on April here. About 10 days ago, word got out of the so-called Skunk Works panel working on getting more from technology in our schools and working at what they refer to as value schools. Here is Richard McClellan, who told me that he is responsible for naming this group.
And we'd like to say thank you for that.
Right. Here is Richard McClellan commenting on this just after it broke.
I'm interested in whether or not we've got some ideas in Michigan to use technology to improve the quality of education and drive down the cost. That's the purpose. That's the name. And it was deliberately called Skunk Works because we were not using the education establishment on the grounds that they have a hard time looking at new ideas and we're seeing it exactly that. They're attacking it before they've ever seen it.
Walt Sorg, how has the dust settled on this development? What does this mean?
Well, the fact that it was the Detroit News that outed this, I think, probably really hurt them, because the Detroit News isn't exactly known as your left-wing newspaper.
Well, don't confuse the editorial pages of the Detroit News with the news pages of the editorial of the Detroit News.
I'm not confused, but a lot of other people would be.
Chad Livengood broke this for the news.
But that didn't help them in the least. The fact that they've left out the entire education establishment, I take issue with my friend Richard on that. Simply because places like Dansville, where they're doing all sorts of pilot programs incorporating the iPad into the classroom, those sorts of things are going on. And leaving the education establishment out and bringing in financial interests that stand to gain with further privatization of the schools, whether it's through the internet or through charter schools or whatever, just makes the whole thing suspect. I think they've
this is basically taking the teacher out of the classroom and putting a computer or something else in in front of these kids and trying to drive down the cost of educating kids from about $7,000 per pupil to $5,000 per pupil. You can't have that discussion with the traditional education lobbyists in the room because they're all trying to protect their own.
But if you look at leaving the educational establishment, you know, that Dick McClellan said he did not want the education establishment in the room because the educational establishment, you know, can kill it. And I think that they proved once again that that was absolutely the case.
How nefarious was this, though?
I think these things happen all the time, quite frankly. I mean, the governor or an administration or legislators have work groups and little, you know, hashing out sessions where they get together and toss around ideas all the time. I think the difference here is that this one, A, got outed, and B, it's kind of like this idea of education that folks have a real discomfort level to, and it could be easily politicized as saying this is a backdoor attempt to get vouchers back into the public school system, and what in the heck is the governor doing?
Well, this just wasn't a group of people who were sitting around in the dorm room late at night coming up with big ideas. These were people who were very, very close to Governor Snyder who were, you know, coming up with this plan, which is why it gave some people, not everyone,
heartburn?
Yeah, the willies.
Well, you also add into it the funding appeal from the private school in Ann Arbor where the governor sends his kids who are saying that we can't educate our kids for $20,000 a year. We need more money. The timing of that was just horrendous for them.
What kind of future does it have? Apparently, the group is still going to meet. McClellan's dropped out, but what kind of future does it have with Mike Flanagan on board?
That's a shroud.
Yeah, okay.
This has gone away. Its mission has been diluted to the point of irrelevance. We're looking at technology in classrooms. Well, who isn't?
I don't think you're going to see it go away that quickly because there are some very
the controversy may not.
There's some very potent forces in the Republican Party in the state and nationally, who even go to the point of saying we shouldn't have a public school system. When you get to the libertarians like Neil Bortz at the national level, I think you'll find the DeVos's a part of that as well, even if they don't say it publicly. And these are very powerful people within the Republican Party. This is one of those issues. I wouldn't be surprised to see some action in the lame duck next year.
Well, school reform never goes away.
That's right.
The
issue I don't think goes away. I think Skunk Works goes away.
Let's turn to roads and road funding. Governor Snyder wants just over $1 billion for that, paid for by higher gas taxes and a bump in registration fees. He apparently needs the votes of
Democrats. Well, he just wants the money. That's just one idea.
Well, when you get paid $1 a year, I mean, you want the money, right?
No, he's collecting a salary.
He's collecting a salary now.
He is, okay. He apparently needs the votes of Democrats who may be hesitating over worries the GOP could repeal Michigan's prevailing wage law. House Minority Leader Tim Grimmel last week likened the situation to terrorism, which became a story in itself. Is the my question, is the governor's plan alive?
Oh, no, it's not. But it hasn't been alive for some time. But I think the issue of raising the gas tax somehow and reconfiguring how that gas tax is collected is very much alive, as is tinkering around with driver registration fees. A 60% increase in driver registration fee isn't going to fly, but 20%, could that fly? Could reconfiguring how people pay their driver registration fees, streamlining it somehow to raise some more money? I think that's very much alive.
One of the questions that Democrats have to consider is what do they want in exchange for giving away votes on a tax hike?
Yes.
Is a promise not to repeal prevailing wage sufficient? Is it more money for schools? Is, you know, how far down that road do you have to do before you're going to put your members up to take what could be some politically perilous votes? I mean, we should talk a little bit about that kerfuffle last week. What happened was Tim Grimmel was the House Democratic leader was talking about the negotiations. Republicans had made noises that if Democrats would not put up the votes, maybe they would go for a more comprehensive solution, which was code for, you know, maybe looking at things like prevailing wage. And Tim Grimmel used the phrase, "We will not bargain with terrorists," which is it's something that a lot of people say in a lot of different contexts. I have young children, and my daughter will sometimes say, "I am not going to clean my room until you promise me Jell-O for dessert." I say, "I will not bargain with terrorists." You
know, on the heels of the Boston thing, though, it came at a bad time.
So after that, and his press secretary, you know, even had to admit that even though it was a toss out, but boy, was it a poor choice of words, you know, considering, you know, the moment. It wasn't quite an apology, but, it was still out there. But then, you know, later on that afternoon, after being accused of insensitivity, Democrats put out another press release basically going, well, you want to talk about insensitivity, talk about the Republicans who, serve on the House Insurance Committee, who walked out in the middle of the hearing on the no-fault reform, and all the people there with the, you know, who were in wheelchairs who were critically injured. Now, that's insensitivity. And so it was, you know, there are some really, really, you know, great messaging debates that go on in our history. You know, Hamilton versus Madison over federalism. This is not one of them.
What's getting lost in this, too, is the governor's got to demonstrate at some point that he can deliver Republican votes on a tough issue. He wasn't able to do it on the international bridge, but he managed to work around the legislature. He hasn't been able to do it so far on transportation funding. He's not been able to do it on Medicaid expansion, which we haven't talked about yet, but he hasn't. So far, nothing's positive is happening there from his point of view on his proposal. At some point, he's going to demonstrate he can produce Republican votes before the Democrats are going to walk the plank for him.
I wanted to get to Rick Pluta's point, though. I don't think the posturing is done yet, obviously, on this road funding debate. And the reason is there's still hard feelings from the right-to-work debate over lame duck. The Democrats got completely steamrolled in December. Everything the Republicans wanted, they got done without one Democratic vote. And the Democrats are still sore about
that.
You
can even circle back and say, you know, some of the paranoia about Skunk Works was related to that, too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you can go back to 2011. I mean, all those things. The Democrats are just paranoid about dealing with Republicans because of the past history. So there's going to be this type of posturing before we can get actually something done.
Sure. I mean, one of the things we're hearing is that they want their agreements in writing.
Right. Well, I talked with Gretchen Whitmer about this yesterday, and she was saying that the polling is showing that whether it's raising the sales tax, which requires two-thirds vote in the legislature and a constitutional amendment referendum, whatever it is, if there's not some tie-in with education, as well, just a tax increase for transportation doesn't fly with the voters.
Should we expect passage of some kind of measure this session?
No.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Two yes, one no.
But I think the question is, will it be enough?
Yeah.
That, you know, the governor wants $1.2 billion, and yeah, I am. That's what I do.
I think it will be in the
ballpark. Well, the need is about 1.6. The governor wants 1.2. We'll see if it hits that.
And it will be a law by committee, no doubt about that. This
right.
will be input from all over the place, right? We should all take the advice of an online commenter at the Detroit News Online. This person simply said, you know, if you drive slower, the roads feel smooth. So we're driving. Great advice. Medicaid expansion. Walt, you mentioned this a minute ago. This was a persistent topic all month. You're working on a piece on this. Review for us where we're at and tell us about your story.
Well, it's an interesting situation because, among other things, Medicaid expansion saves the state money in the long term. It's about $1.1 billion over the next decade because of the federal money that would be coming in. The feds would be taking over costs for mental health, for medical treatment for prisoners, those sorts of things. It would expand the number of people covered by insurance or Medicaid in Michigan by some say as many as a million people, about 450,000 of them expanded Medicaid coverage. Republicans aren't buying it at this point. It is the word Obama is toxic to an awful lot of the Republican caucus. They don't care what it is. It can be Obama kittens, and they're going to be against it. But it seems like where this is going is the polling is showing there's a lot more public support for it and perhaps more legislative support on the Republican side for it if the state can get a waiver and require people in Medicaid to have a copay, to have a greater copay or participate in the premium a little bit on the theory. It's part of this broader theory that poor people simply don't pay enough in taxes.
Well, what Republicans are looking for is something that will give them enough cover among their constituency to walk that plank on doing anything that smacks of supporting any aspect of Obamacare.
Right, because you can't have Medicaid expansion. It's got to be Medicaid reform. We got to reform the system so that the people who are receiving Medicaid go to the doctor every year, that they quit smoking, maybe they watch their weight.
Kyle is using the nomenclature shift that they're trying to accomplish.
Yes,
not
exactly.
Expansion, but reform.
Exactly. I mean, because that's important, because you start talking about expanding government, there's a bad connotation with that in Tea Party groups, and they don't want to get on the wrong side of them.
Your nominations here for most overlooked, underreported story for the month of April. anybody.
I think even though there's been some coverage of it, I think locally a big story is going to be we're going to have an incredibly dirty city council campaign. It's going to get very, very nasty, especially in the
fourth.
Canfora, a Yorko campaign in the fourth.
That's where Kyle and I live, and I would say it's already there.
yeah, it's getting there, that's for sure. You know, I guess my nomination would be, and there's been some coverage of this, is the idea of taking away welfare benefits from people whose kids are skipping school, the truancy debate, because that bill is going through the House right now, and I would expect that's going to get to the governor and get signed. And I think what's interesting is that the administration allegedly has been doing this for some time. I don't think it's gotten a lot of news coverage at all, but the idea that we're trying to keep kids in school and attaching the welfare hammer to it, I think it's pretty interesting.
I think the prospect of the new state budget jeopardizing the state's agreement with the regarding the children's rights lawsuit in foster care.
Okay. Anybody going to be watching the this proposal apparently to tax online purchases in Michigan?
Yeah, you know, I've been watching that for 12 years. Mm-hmm. You know, haven't we been watching this forever, Rick? And I guess I've just become immune to it, that it's not really going to happen. It's just some kind of fantasy
no,
that's
it is,
out.
No, it is happening.
I know it's happening, but it's hard to believe that it's going to happen.
It's happening incrementally. This is not going to be, you know, a ton of bricks that drops. It's just slowly over time, more and more retailers going to come on are going to come on board, and eventually paying taxes on retail purchases is going to be normal as paying them at the brick-and-mortar stores.
I was somewhat surprised that I guess my nominee for overlooked underreported for the month would be the Notre Dame study. If you heard about this at all, there was a study that came out of Notre Dame. A guy from Central Michigan worked on the study as well that said that the existence of Asian carp in the Great Lakes is likely. They're already here, according to DNA studies.
Actually, there's been some science that says that suggested that already. That in itself is not a bombshell. The question is, you know, that they assume that there are some scattered here and there, just not in large enough numbers to create the problems that we're afraid of if there's actually a real migration.
We have, but we've been led to believe these things are so predatory. If any of them are here, it's like, oh. Look out.
I know, it's a little bit like
four.
Asian carp is the new land shark.
We want to thank all of our guests here for looking back on the month of April and spending a fair amount of time looking ahead as well. That's always fun. Rick Plute of the Michigan Public Radio Network. Walt Sorg is a columnist for City Pulse. And Kyle Malin is back from MERS, the Michigan Information and Research Service. Many thanks, guys.
You're
See
welcome.
You again soon.